Welcome to the American Med Spa Podcast, Medical Spa Insider. This week, founder Alex Tiersch is joined by Dr. Alex Blinsky, founder and medical director of Plump Cosmetics and Injectables.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Medical Spa Insider. This is Alex Tiersch. We have on the AmSpa hotline Dr. Alex Blinsky, who is the founder, medical director of Plump Cosmetics and Injectables, which is located in New York. Many of you may have heard of them. If you have not, I strongly encourage you to look them up because it's a really cool brand. And I think Dr. Blinsky has done an incredible job building something that was really different and kind of revolutionary at the beginning. You know, we're seeing more and more of these things pop up, but we'll get into that. Dr. Blinsky, first of all, how are you doing? You're in New York. You're kind of in the you were in the epicenter of this pandemic. What's going on right now, and how are you doing?
I mean, we're doing. Thanks for having me. First off,
yeah.
We're doing pretty well. You know, there's a rough couple months there that we were closed, and New York took a pretty big hit from coronavirus. But we're doing well. The city is doing. I would say the city is doing okay.
Yeah.
We've been open and operating. Partial speed since June. So we're coming up on 2.5 months, and honestly, we've been doing really well. I think that I've been reading on like some of the message boards, like on Facebook for AmSpa and a couple other places, that most people are bouncing back pretty well. Mm-hmm. We're having a lot of volume right now, and I think that there's a lot of reasons behind that, which we can dive into if you wanted to.
Yeah, no, I absolutely would. I've talked to a few different people the last week, and the sentiment is very similar to what you're saying. I mean, there are some folks who have been unable to open for a variety of reasons, or just have kind of collapsed under the weight of what's going on. But those who have really been successful, and there's a lot of reasons for that. I'm curious to hear kind of what your take is on why volume is up and why you're doing so well right now.
So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things going on. I mean, I think that a lot of businesses had a hard time with the break in revenue and paying landlords and things like that. And landlords, I live in one of the most difficult landlord cities in the country.
Yeah, no kidding.
The landlords are challenging. The rents are high. And some landlords are more reasonable than others, which has been helpful for us. But it hasn't worked that way for all of our locations. The first thing that I saw when this was going on, my first thought was, I was doing these Zoom calls with staff during our quarantine, and I was just thinking, man, I'm looking at myself, everyone's looking at themselves.
Right.
So I knew there was going to be an influx of patients, including new patients, that are more conscious about what they look like on camera.
Right.
Which is... it's a double-edged sword. It's definitely a good pusher for patients, but also it's harder because people are a little bit pickier about their results because they're looking at themselves all the time.
Right.
I think the other big pusher that patients may not realize that, they're starting to realize that now, but I think the other big pusher is the downtime.
Yep.
So patients are having the ability to sit further away from a camera, or they don't have to go in at all, or they don't have to have a Zoom meeting for a week or whatever it is.
Right.
And there's also the mask aspect. I was surprised. The one thing I was surprised about during all this was how many patients wanted to do their lips. I thought that was going to be decreased a little bit. And I thought people were going to want their under eyes and crow's feet and Botox and all the other stuff and cheek filler.
Yep.
But in all reality, I mean, in the first month we did, as a group, we just did so many lifts. It was wild.
Now, did you have any conversations, obviously, with people that explained, you know, why lips were kind of the first thing they wanted to do upon coming back?
I don't know that it would go towards something with coronavirus. I do think that having the mask on for recovery is definitely, people are like, oh, you know what, if I bruise, I can throw on my mask. I do think that when we think about this industry in a recession, because that's what we're in, and people wanting to spend less money, which we haven't really seen, but people wanting to spend less money, I think about the procedures that you get the most bang for your buck.
Yep.
And I do think that lips is honestly one of those procedures where you get really good value for the money you spend. So I do think that the consumer is more educated than they were, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And they know that they can go from 0 to 60 a little easier with a lip injection than necessarily a cheek injection. Price points are similar for our practice.
Right.
So I just think that that might be kind of part of it.
Yeah. Now I've heard that, for folks that are open, I've heard two things, and I guess we'll take each kind of step by step. First of all, there was a very strong June and even a July, and depending when you opened, I've heard that this month is starting to even out a little bit. For some it is, for some it's not. What are you experiencing right now? Are you kind of getting back to what the normal was because folks have that pent up demand factor has gone away, and now they're back to kind of just a normal regimen?
You know, I think that August is notoriously, you know, July and August really are notoriously, for at least for us, are our slow months.
Right.
And obviously it wasn't that way this year. August has been pretty on par with our previous months of business. We are purposely at a limited capacity as far as patient flow. We used to see someone every 30 minutes, and we changed that to every hour. We've learned a lot from this whole thing going on. But August has been pretty good compared to previous months. It's been about the same. We're all very busy, which is kind of what we want to be. But we have changed our patient flow on purpose just to give more time for not only cleaning the room and making sure all the other patients are safe, but also making sure that the staff has time to have their masks on appropriately and take care of themselves.
Right. So, you know, the other question, and I do have a follow-up to what you just talked about, but first, I've also heard that there, and you mentioned this earlier, is that it's not just the pent-up demand, but there is an influx of new patients that are coming in for all the reasons you had talked about, masks.
Yeah, there's a new demand.
Yeah. To me, that's kind of fascinating, and I'm wondering how this is all going to play out. But what have you seen an uptick in new patients, and what do you attribute that to?
I was surprised, but yes. And it's like, if anything, it irritates existing patients the most because, again, we're limited capacity, so that people are having a hard time getting in. The only thing that I can attribute it to is that people are looking at themselves more because they are doing home meetings and Zoom calls and stuff like that. And you know, maybe I was like, sometimes, you know, you turn off the camera so you don't have to look at yourself all the time.
Yeah.
Because when you're in a face-to-face meeting with somebody, or even like you and I are having right now, I'm not looking at myself. My hair can be all over the place. It doesn't matter.
You don't even have to wear pants.
So when you're in a face-to-face meeting, if your makeup's messed up, you don't know your makeup's messed up till you leave.
Right. Right.
So people are really picking themselves apart. I think people are super critical of themselves. I mean, I definitely think there's a psyche behind all of this.
Right.
But I don't see that changing. I think that's going to become more. I think that it's going to make this business a little bit more popular. I know that they even have filters now, I heard, for Zoom meetings.
There's
where you can kind of, you know.
It's kind of a crazy new world and it's going to be interesting to see how long, you know, the Zoom effect lasts. One theory I've heard about kind of the boon in new patients for existing businesses is that because of some of the things you talked about earlier, which was, you know, those businesses that are able to survive the rent conundrum. Right.
Yeah.
So those who are able to kind of withstand what we went through are better off because there's been a lot of others that have gone out of business. Have you seen kind of in your area that there's been some, have there been any casualties and folks that you know aren't offering treatments anymore?
You know, the ones that have gone out of business, they were already slated to kind of go out of business. The ones that I know of,
it's not
news to me that they, I don't think it's anything new from coronavirus. I do think that there is some spillover from places that were more med spa-y. And I know that you, maybe the listeners don't know a lot about our practice versus like a med spa practice, a traditional med spa. We're not too traditional in that aspect.
Right.
But I do think that like a lot of places still aren't able to do facials, for example, because it doesn't fall under the medical category. So I do think there's some spillover from that and places that are still struggling because of that. But, I haven't heard or seen a lot of places that have really just completely gone under, at least in this city. I've heard of people looking to open new places. But I haven't really heard of many problems. But it's still pretty early in the game. I do think that we're, on the right track as far as coronavirus goes. And I'm optimistic that, New York will be back on its feet in a year and that people will start to be normal once the vaccine comes out.
Yeah. Do you think it'll take kind of a full year for us to normalize and get back to where we were?
So, I'm sure that some of the listeners that are in New York or from New York have been here, they can kind of walk the streets and kind of see what's going on. It's a different world right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of vacancies. I don't know that New York comes back very fast with all this amount of vacancy going on in the commercial real estate world as well as the residential real estate world. I do think it's going to take a little bit of time to bounce back, but I think what people need to remember is that New York's a very unique city and creative, and they'll figure it out. I'm not worried about it. There are parts of the city that are booming right now.
Yeah.
I went to dinner the other night, and it was a two-hour wait to sit outside, and these restaurants have more seats than they would have had indoors.
Yeah.
So the streets are littered with seats, and there's social distancing and mask wearing, and we've been pretty good with our rates of coronavirus. So I do think that there are pockets of really optimism. But in reality, I think it is going to take a little bit of time for us to bounce all the way back to close to where we were.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's you mentioned earlier that you had learned a lot of lessons, and I'm curious, what's one or two that you've learned from this that you think, is either going to stick around into the future or is going to change the way that your business or other business operates in general?
So some of the things that we've learned during the quarantine and after quarantine are definitely going to stick with us. Our business and our vision was never to have a place that was like very high volume and like whipping patients down every 15 minutes where some other places are like that. And I understand that some of the procedures are very fast, but we really wanted a kind of heightened experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to do appointments that were every half hour. And then when we limited our flow a little bit because of coronavirus to an hour, we did see that things are still going pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of businesses will look at that or hear that and say, whoa, an hour? How am I supposed to make money? Listen, it's a very, very fragile and tough equation to get us to where we are, but we want everyone to be happy. That's our number one. Our number one goal is for our employees to like love working here and enjoy the whole experience. So I do think that we're going to be having kind of never go back to those 30-minute appointments.
Really?
I don't know where we're gonna sit, but I've met with all of our injectors and we've talked about it, and everyone's really happy with how things are going, and the revenue has been good. So I know where our numbers are and our break evens are and things like that off the top of my head. So I mean, things look good on paper and they're good. You know, there's no reason to push the envelope. We're all pretty happy with the pace we're doing. So I think that was one of the major things I learned from this.
That's interesting because probably like if you were looking at your business model and break evens and P&Ls and all that before this happened, and someone was to ask you, okay, we're going to go through a pandemic, you're going to close, you're going to open back up, and you're going to only be able to see one patient per hour. Like you would have said, no, there's no way that's going to last, right? That's just a temporary thing. But here you are and you're thinking of keeping it. It's funny how things work out.
It's funny how things work out. And I mean, it's better for everybody. I think that the patient gets a little bit better of a consult. Granted, in 30 minutes, they should get a really good consult to begin with. But I think if the patient gets a better consult, I mean, obviously, the times when they're doing 20 units of Botox and they've into our office before and they're like on their phone while I'm doing the Botox.
Right.
It's going to be a 5 minute consult and I'll have a break. I mean, it's not the end of the world to have a break. Take right. advantage of it, eat your lunch, whatever. But I definitely took that from this. And I also took from this whole thing just how resilient this business can be. I mean, we work really hard to make this business what it is, but I think it's pretty amazing how resilient this business can be and how like amazing our employees are.
Yep.
And the kind of like working with me through everything and everyone's happy now. They're, you know, back to normal life for the most part. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always say, I say it all day. I say, we have lemons. Let's make lemonade this year.
Yeah.
Just like, let's not try to push anything.
Yep. I think that's a great approach. And I'll second your sentiments on the resiliency of the business. And I'll, you know, multiply that and say that the entire industry, I think, you know, I was talking to an investor the other day who's looking to get into med spas and, you know, was asking about COVID and the future of the industry and all that. And my take, and I would love to hear your take on this, is that the one thing that's happened is we've really proved the concept of the med spa, you know, working and providing facial injectables and aesthetic treatments, because it was really one of the first things that people spent money on when they were able to get out of their house. And to me, the business proposition that you can offer in aesthetic treatments in a, you know, a non-surgical environment is now fully proven. And the sky's the limit once we get back to business, I think.
100%. I think that you hit that on the head. And I mean, this has been our business model for years. And I mean, during this type of environment, I would expect beauty services, and if bars were open, I'd expect them to be busy too.
Yeah.
But just, that's kind of like that's just how the things work in this time. Like, people want to have fun and look good because they're so stressed with everything else.
Yeah. Have you seen an increase in the amount patients are spending per visit than prior?
Yeah, I do think that's going to level off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I also have seen that an availability spike. So if
right.
we don't have as much availability, when the patient gets in the chair, they're kind of, I don't like that they feel pressured to do more things, and I'm never pressuring people to do more things. But I have had patients like, well, I can't get in to see you for another month.
Right.
I can't get in to see you. I was looking every day. So they feel a little bit, they're like, well, maybe we should do a little in my lips. Uh-huh. I was only going to do my cheeks today, and maybe we should just do my Botox so that I'm ready.
Right.
So I do think that there is a little bit of that going on. I think that will start to tone down eventually.
Uh-huh.
And I'm curious what the winter holds in New York, because it's probably not going to be the most fun winter in this city that I've spent. So we'll see
yeah,
if that changes things a little bit.
I think
bit.
You're probably right. You know, it's interesting. I'll be interested to see if there's for your business in particular, because I've heard that the volume per patient is going up, and it has gone up for a lot of businesses. But for your business in particular, you're going from the half an hour to the hour. I wonder if that's going to have any sort of an impact on the amount of money patients spend, or if it's almost going to even out or work in your favor, because now that you have a longer consult, you have less availability, there's going to be more money spent per patient. That could be something, another interesting dynamic in your business.
I agree. I mean, I always thought it was, you know, patient dependent, economic dependent, but I think that there's a little bit more to it. I think that our price points are pretty reasonable. So people are open to getting a second syringe if you know, if it's warranted. I mean, we turn people away all the time, but I mean, I'm sure that plenty of med spas do that too.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, there's so many lessons to be learned. So, you know, you've mentioned it. I mentioned it at the beginning, and you've mentioned the patient experience a few times. And that your med spa, if you even call it a med spa, it's a little different than the traditional med spa. And I would love to dive into that, because it's what you've built as a brand is, I mean, I think it's very appealing. It's really incredible. We've seen others build similar models in other parts of the country, but it really is, it's different from your traditional med spa. You're not offering everything and anything under the sun. You're very focused on making it kind of a unique but normal and patient-centric experience. First of all, just talk about your business model a little bit and how it might be different to people listening who haven't don't know about you and know what the uniqueness that we're talking about is.
Sure. So when we first were looking at doing this, I was doing injectables by myself, and I presented the idea to someone that's a close friend of mine, and he's obviously a business partner now, and another friend of mine that's a designer, and she's a partner as well. And I was at a point where I was trying to basically just find a way to keep my cost of goods down and still offer a reasonable price to patients. And that eventually morphed into where we are now. It just took a lot of time because the whole idea was to live a good life and offer the services and experience to patients at a reasonable price. So that's kind of where it started.
Right. But you don't
I'm trying to think of what your question was. Look, we originally said the word med spa was a no-no word.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like someone would be like, oh, you run a med spa. I'm like, no, we don't run a med spa. Leave me alone.
Right.
We're injectables only. That's what we do. I think 98% of our business is injectable.
Right.
So that's where all the revenue is. So that, and then I really wanted to use like the New York aesthetic and like the vibe of New York and create an environment that was like friendly, warm, inviting, that someone can come in and feel like comfortable doing their treatments and not feel like they're at a doctor's office or at a med spa.
Right.
So it's like a fine line between that. And I mean, we've gone back and forth between a billion different design ideas. And some people have, some other businesses have made some really nice design concepts too. And I think it hits home. I mean, I feel like when people walk in here, it's like warm, it's inviting, smells good. And yeah. Everyone here is like, is incredibly high level training. We make sure that our injectors are like top of the top.
Well, and what was the main difference that I see from a business model like yours, and there's several, but it's really the focus on injectables only. And I say only in quotes, cause I know that's not the only thing you do, but it's primarily injectables. And you've been doing that since, I mean, you first opened, I think it was 2011 when you opened.
So I was doing injectables by myself.
Okay, gotcha.
Back then. And right. I don't know how much you know. I'm sure you know a lot about the Allergan tears and things like that. Yep. But I was tearing up in Allergan levels pretty fast.
Yep.
And I mean, I was whipping patients around, and I still couldn't get to those levels that I wanted to be at.
Yep.
And I had so many people that wanted to train with me. And I, like a young, naive guy, I was like, yeah, sure, why not?
Mm-hmm.
But those relationships forged and built some phenomenal injectors that, I mean, they can inject me any day of the week. I probably need some Botox right now. But that created this relationship and a job opportunity for some people that were working, who knows, they're physician's assistants that worked in the emergency room or worked in vascular surgery, or they were MPs that worked, you know, 13-hour shifts at a derm office seeing 50 mm-hmm. patients. And it gave them the opportunity to make similar, if not better, revenue and work a much healthier lifestyle for them
mm-hmm.
And create a team that, you know, we have now. And part of the pull, too, is that we have these meetings where we review cases. We do once a month. We have our case reviews. We have, like, problems we had, new technology, what's going on. I think if you don't have those like continuing medical education that you would normally have in a hospital setting or even a residency training setting, I think that you kind of fall behind the eight ball. So I think that's a huge thing. And that's a lot of my time is spent doing that, but so, I think it's worth it. And everyone's really happy about it.
So you treat your business almost like, I mean, it's almost like a teaching hospital, right? Where you sit down and
it is 100% built. So I was a chief resident, I did, unfortunately, 4 years of residency, but I mean, you learn a lot from all that stuff. And I took a lot of that type of environment where we can like sit down and review cases and review patients' photos and talk about a bad case. And I have bad cases too. Everyone has problems.
Right.
And talk about what we could have done better. You know, maybe it was done perfectly, but what could we have done better? Or what could we have seen beforehand, like retrospectively,
right,
that could have prevented us from treating this patient, even if it was nonsense. But like, hopefully it's nonsense. Hopefully it's a month where we don't have any real problems. And it's a case of like, oh, she, you know, or he or she was just a little bit of a difficult patient. And we probably should have seen that ahead of time and pumped the brakes.
Right.
But I think that taking a lot of that aspect of like a hospital system, I think makes the wheels kind of go here from a medical aspect.
I think that's, I mean, that's incredible. And I'm impressed, and I like it, because I think we need more of that in this industry. Because
it's the hard part. That's one of the hardest parts.
Now, do you do training only for prospective injectors who are going to work for you, or do you have any training for outside people?
You know, a certain time ago, I thought that maybe training for people that were just emailing me and texting me and DMing me was a good idea, and I didn't really do it. I did a couple people. It just doesn't make sense. A 1 week training is like, it doesn't make sense. You can't learn anything.
It's like a lesson to learn more, right?
Yeah, you're going to fly in and you're going to pay me a couple dollars to follow me around for a week and see my patients. And we talk to you about all the patients and like the cases and everything. It just doesn't make sense. It's nice and it makes me feel good, but it doesn't make sense. You're not going to know anything when you leave. It's like doing one of those Botox courses on a weekend, where like you leave and you don't even know how to mix the Botox. Like, you know what it does, you know how to inject it a little bit, but you don't know how to mix it. So nowadays we do a 3 month, like a fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple other practices that do something similar. I know a lot of derm practices do that, where they'll kind of have you go to like a boot camp for 3 to 6 months and you're learning how to treat patients, and whether it's dermatology or cosmetic dermatology.
Right.
But we really focus on that way. You get a real nice long training that's in depth, and we can go over everything. That way, when you come out, do you know everything? No, but when you come out, you're confident. You know how to wield a needle. You know how to mix Botox. You understand dilutions. You understand what products go where. I just think that those little 1 week trainings aren't worth it. So I kind of veered away from them. I'd rather create value in a potential employee that can be with us for a long time and hopefully be really happy here. So that's kind of the route we've gone down.
Now, what do you do? I've heard of others who do a lot of training, but there are many people out there who are very scared to train people to that extent, because they think, well, I'm going to train them and they're just going to turn around and leave. And now I'm stuck with, you know, some that I've trained my competition. How do you deal with that?
You got to find the right people.
Yeah. And how do you do that?
You got to find the right. I've interviewed, so we have someone new joining our team. So we've had 3 people new join our team over the last like 2 years. We have two of them have been with us now for almost, one of them's been with us for 6 months, one's been with us for a year. They're both fantastic. We do have some pretty steep legal paperwork that everyone has to sign, and most people are fine with it when they understand the whole picture, because there's more upside than there is downside to all this. We have someone new coming on. It's the same type of scenario. But someone screens people, and we screened over like 100 people.
Yeah.
And it's just, these are diamonds in the rough, right? We're looking for someone that is a good fit for us, and doesn't raise any red flags, and like just really gets along with us. And we feel like it's going to be loyal and transparent to us. Cause I really just ask that everyone just tells me if they're thinking something, tell me what you're thinking. I'm not going to be offended by it.
So
that's kind of how we find someone.
It's the most important part, right? So, I mean,
yeah,
having
always.
Your team. I want to get back just a little bit, cause to kind of the overall concept, when you were opening, was there any temptation to open more of a traditional med spa offering, you know, going out and buying a $150,000 laser and resurfacing and all that kind of stuff? Because back in the day, what people were expecting.
I completely understand. I mean, this is self-funded by myself and like my sweat equity partners. So there was no money to do that. I was fresh out of residency,
yeah.
And we don't have investors. So that I would look at those machines. I'm like, oh, that's fancy behind the glass. I'd love to buy that thing. I want an M Sculpt. How much is it? So it didn't really cross our paths at that time. I mean, every time I bring it up, nowadays I kind of get my wrist slapped. because it's like, stay in your lane. So, I mean, it's definitely something we have thought about, but I think that being really good at one thing is fantastic. And I do think that the machines do play a role, and I refer people out all the time, to other like practices, to med spas, to dermatology offices for laser treatments. But you're going to be doing that anyway. You know, you're going to be sending your patients out anyway if you have a medical practice or med spa, because you're going to have someone that comes in that has a skincare question about a mole, and you're going to say, you know what, it's really best that this is evaluated by a board certified dermatologist. This is who I recommend.
What about the argument? And I 100% agree with you. But what about the argument that if you refer someone out for an M Sculpt or Cool Sculpting or whatever it might be, you're introducing them to a potential competitor, and now you're going to lose them. Have you experienced that?
It's always a risk. But like, I don't know. I think that when you have a medically run business, which is what we are, I think that ideally, ethically, you have the patient's best interest in mind. So I think if you are true of heart, I think they will come back to you, right? You're offering mm-hmm. a good service. They don't care that other place offers Botox. Mm-hmm. They're still going to come back to you. And listen, some people won't, and that's life.
Yeah. But so are you sticking to the kind of injectables only concept for the most part? I mean, or is there, are there plans to bring in, would you be averse to it?
We've looked at it. I don't have any immediate plans to do anything different. We've looked at it, and we've talked to, some of the device makers and things like that. And I always, I go to these meetings that you guys hold and talk to all the device makers. If it makes sense, it makes sense. And right now I think we're pretty happy where we're at. And again, we're privately funded by ourselves. If I had investors and all these things, I might feel differently about it. I have a good friend that has, he just had an investor, and he bought some devices. The investor bought some devices, and I'm not against that model at all. I mean, there is money to be made in machines. There is no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. But I think that you should really do your research about the machines. I do like to use RealSelf as a place to go look about the worth it ratings on machines and things like that. Find out what procedures people like. But I think that as long as you do your research, I think there's, and you know how to use a device and you're compliant with, the legal structure behind it, I think there's a lot of money in machines.
No, there certainly is. And I think there's a lot of money in injectables too. I think that's one of the kind of myths about this industry that is being, that has been shattered by entrepreneurs like yourself.
Totally.
Because, back, I remember when I started AmSpa and I was a lawyer before then, back in 2008, 2009, I mean, the common thread at plastic surgery and derm meetings was that Botox is a loss leader. Injectables are a loss leader,
yeah.
Right? You use that to get them in for surgery. That myth has been kind of shattered, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. I mean,
it's still there.
Yeah.
It's still there. I have a friend and colleague that, there's a loss leader there. He does really well with, the injectables as a loss leader. I think, I don't know the whole logistics of everything, but I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think that, Cool Sculpting in some of these plastic surgery that specialize in liposuction, I think it can be a huge loss leader for that.
Yeah.
Who cares? Because a lot, even if you have a problem with Cool Sculpting, the company that makes Cool Sculpting, which we know who that is going to usually pay for the liposuction if you have hypertrophy of the fat. So I think there is something to be said for that environment still. I think that you can have good loss leaders and still make really nice living.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I guess my point there was just that you can certainly do it with injectables only.
You can do it this way too. Yep. Yeah, you can do it this way too. I mean, I realized that when I first started, but there's a business. There's a business here. There's a definite business. Yeah. You know?
Well, I've kept you for over well over a half hour, and I want to be respectful of your time during this crazy time. But what does the future hold for Plump? You've got three locations now, right, in New York City?
We got three locations in New York City. One of them is in Midtown on the east side, one in Chelsea, and one in Soho. All of them are doing great. Really happy. We are planning on expanding. I can talk about we're planning on expanding to Miami. We have been in talks already. I'm from Miami. My dad's in Miami. He's a plastic surgeon. And we have some injectors that we're training.
That's awesome.
So we're looking at that. And we're probably going to be staying pretty East Coast friendly at this point in time, just because we want to stay close to home to a point. And make sure that we can keep an eye on everything that's going on. And I think slow and steady wins the race, and hopefully we'll slowly just continue to grow the practice and the brand.
So, and as you expand, and I guess I'll leave it with this, because there's a lot of our listeners are getting into the industry and they want to open a med spa, and the traditional model has always been you open a big med spa with lasers and all that. But what I've seen is that entrepreneurs like yourself who have developed kind of the smaller injectables only model, which is more scalable, tend to be approached by some of these bigger investors that are flooding in the industry right now, these big private equity funds and hedge funds. Have you experienced that yet? Have you been through the ringer yet with any of these people coming in trying to buy you and scoop you up and roll you up into a bigger brand?
So I think that, I mean, yes and no. Yes. And we think, you know, you never know when someone's coming to talk to you, if they're just interested in getting some stats or whatever, but we have had some conversations with people. We don't have any plans on selling tomorrow or anything like that. Yeah. You know, we're really enjoying, as young entrepreneurs, I consider myself young still, I've been really enjoying learning about business and growing the brand. It's a lot of fun. But I've had people from the beginning that have wanted to jump on, and my recommendation to people that are early on in this is to really just be smart with your decision making and have conversations with people you trust. Because we had people in the beginning that, you know, were like, hey, I want to jump on with you. This is before I even opened the first pump. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to jump on. This is a good idea. I want to jump on. Your idea sounds good. So I just think it, taking a step, looking backwards at it, I feel like I'm happy I didn't jump into any of those. And we have had people approach us for more in-depth conversations from investor standpoints, because there are people out there that are in the beauty world that you know a lot about it, and they probably can bring a lot of value to our business. Yeah. But at this current time, we're kind of like very focused on just growing our brand and creating more value in ourselves and our team.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, for those of you who are listening, the brand that you've built, and it's plumplife.com, right? Is where they find, is it your website?
Or getplump.com.
Getplump.com or plumplife. And what's the Instagram so people can follow you there?
It's getplump.
Get plump. Okay. But I encourage people to check out your Instagram and your website and just your overall branding, because if you're in the business or you're getting into the business with the goal of scaling and ultimately selling and making some real money, I mean, I think you're a great example of kind of how to start that foundation. So, I mean, congrats to all your success, and I certainly wish you the best, and I hope you and everyone are coming out of this COVID thing, you know, safe and healthy.
Thank you so much for having me. Wish the same to you too.
Awesome.
I've enjoyed our friendship over the last couple of years.
Awesome. So. Me too. Well, we'll have to have you back on soon.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks for joining us this week with the American MedSpa Podcast, Medical Spa Insider. This week, founder Alex Tiersch was joined by Dr. Alex Blinsky, founder and medical director of Plump Cosmetics and Injectables. If you're new with us, we'd love to invite you to hit the subscribe button. Click it now, so you can catch AmSpa content delivered to you each time. Leave a rating and a review. See you on our next episode.